Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Tony Knopp, welcome, sir.
How are you? Good to talk to you again.
It's great to talk with you, Tony. Great. A lot to cover here. A lot.
The world went crazy. Yeah, it's only been 6 weeks, and college football is drunk, and the IOC is doing crazy things, and tennis stars are disappearing. It's crazy.
It's unbelievable. So let's start with the, quote, China issue. The United States, there'll be no diplomatic presence. I'm like, you know, something tells me China's listening. They go, oh, my God, really? oh, no. What do we do now? But there have been some people that have talked boycott. Nobody's going to boycott. What is the economic impact for China, and have any companies backed away because it is China?
So I will answer the question with a business hat on and not with my moral and ethical hat on.
So yes,
what I am saying is what is going to happen and how they're considering it, not how I would consider it. So
right.
That's my form of qualification.
Yes.
This, much like you're never going to hear LeBron James say free Hong Kong because he has too much economic interest in it, you're never going to hear NBC or the sponsors pull away from the China Olympic Games simply because you've got Paris, you've got Los Angeles, you've got Milan, you've got massive games upcoming that are economic just booms, and IOC knows it, probably why they played it that way and picked the cities and countries that they did. So despite the fact that I think everybody, you know, with a cold mic that wouldn't be tracked would say that they would like to do things differently and, you know, possibly put some pain on China, they do know that if they do that, the IOC has shown that they are incredibly, they operate like the mob, and if you do something like that to them and to the host city that they chose, there's going to be consequence for it in the future. So as much as we'd like there to be this movement about human rights catastrophes that are happening and to see brands, you know, just pull away completely, they're just going to try to quietly distance themselves in the hopes that they can capitalize on the three big games that are coming.
All right, so let's start with something I think people don't realize. You and I both know this. Beijing, by a 44-40 vote, beat out the only other bidder, and that was Kazakhstan. This was not a games that was heavily bid on. Everyone thought Oslo would get it, and they backed out. Since then, it's been, okay, Paris, L.A., they're going to split. They got Milan. Right, so they've got the next three, and we already know where 32 is going. It's going to Brisbane. Yeah. It seems like the IOC has been very careful about selection and not bidding between now and 32. Is that fair?
Yes, because I think there's a couple of things that have gone along with this, and I think we're seeing FIFA make a realization of this as well. You know, they always say never make a decision when you're in an extreme state, right? Never make a decision when everything's going so well, and never make a decision when things are going terribly wrong. You know, FIFA and the IOC were flying high on the hog for a while there. They saw that this was an opportunity for them to maybe cash in and go to some more developing countries that were cash rich, that were willing to pay for this. So you have a World Cup that's in Qatar. You have an Olympic Games that was in South Korea and Pyeongchang. And then you have one that's back in Beijing, even though we were just in Beijing in 2008. I think they realized, you know, in that time span, as people started to fall off, as Boston pulled out of their bid because the city got sued, as Chicago, you know, their bid didn't really show the way they were hoping it to, that maybe it's time for them to start going back to some of the glamour ones and paint the games with a little bit better picture. What a lot of people don't realize is this is not new. This is kind of the way the games were going before the 1984 LA games
Right. Changed
the way the economics worked, and they started selling a bunch of sponsorships, and they showed that, hey, this could be an economic boom for the region. And I think they're getting back to that playbook right now, and that's why there's rumors about Salt Lake City coming back in, and cities that, you know, just 2, 3, 4 years ago would have stayed overnight.
All right, so let's shift from that, may return to it here, and let's get to the college football playoff. They're going to delay whatever they're doing till January, and it sounds like January is the last time they feel they can do something and have it be viable for 2024.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the Alliance, which you know I'm not exactly in there. I don't get why is the Big Ten doing it? I'm sitting there like going, who sat down and said, hey, this is a great idea? No, it's not a great idea. But they're saying, you would be content with 8. You and I both know, Tony, if you go to 8, ESPN already owns all the New Year's Six bowl games with contracts, so they're going to get no more money out of it. You got to go to 12 to get more money. Is that really the simple answer right there?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, I'm going to answer with what the business...
Yeah, I totally got it.
So what I agree with, right? Yeah, so right. Like you and I would both agree that, you know, hey, it makes more sense to have 12 or even go to what the subdivision has done, where they have a playoff that's economically viable, that Brown's a national champion, that has, you know, conference champions go in. And it's very simple, you know, if we were starting from scratch, this is what we do. But we're not starting from scratch. We have a lot of economic debt, so to speak, that's tied to this system. And when you're talking about moving to 8, now you're talking about taking bowl games that have a lot of economic interest tied to them. They have, you know, financial obligations that are tied to local banks, local sponsors, local teams, all those things, and they're paid in by ESPN, and you're changing their value on a year-to-year basis. And that's how businesses are financed. If you're going to now go back and say, you know, if I was the Rose Bowl, and I could say every year I have a big opportunity for a marquee game for Ohio State to play USC or for Penn State to play Washington, and now I'm telling you that my game is going to be a little undervalued every other year or every 3 years, that changes everything for them economically. That's built over time. So it's just not that easy to come in and say, this is the way we should do it, so let's go do it, because you have people who've created an entire business around it and they're living. And so you're right. What they're trying to do now, because you hear them talk about it, you hear Mike Bowen talk about it, you hear Swarbrick talk about it, and they say, look, we wanted to leak this to the public in advance so that we can kind of get ahead of the PR as we start to make that decision. I think what they're trying to understand is, you know, there's a goal that they have in place, and in order for them to get to that goal, they've got to walk through a lot of really just ugly public relations. Like, it's going to come out as to why it took a while to do this. And I don't know if they have a stomach for it. You know, like the best analogy I would draw is, you know, I was talking to some guys who are involved in the Crypto.com Arena deal with Staples Center, and their SVP of marketing said something really interesting. He said, we don't care what you call it. That's not the point of this deal, right? If you don't call it Crypto.com Arena for the next 4 years, we don't care. We have a longer vision in this. And that's how they're looking at this. They're saying, look, we know this is going to be stinky for a few years, but we have to grease the right palms. It's not that much different than, unfortunately, the conversation we just had about the IOC in China.
Right.
Right. Like, yeah, we want to get to this 12-game playoff, but we're going to have to pay off some bowls and some people that maybe aren't the most outstanding along the way for them to walk away from, you know, business that they've been relying on for a number of years.
Well, what's interesting about this is that you can do that with the home games in the opening round, then incorporate the bowls. I think that there's an appeasement level there. But there's one, let's get to the part, and you're very close to this. You know personally how I feel about the Rose Bowl. I don't like the Rose Bowl. I love the Rose Bowl. Okay, simple. I mean, I don't just like it. I love it. And all you have to do is go there once. You've been many times. I've been there 3 times. And you look around and go, you know what? This is what I grew up on. Yet in this, the Rose Bowl is an issue in the playoff as to how they fit in this. Is there any talk as to how it works and how the Rose Bowl continues to work in the structure of a 12-team playoff?
I think they know the chip that they hold, right?
Yes.
And I think there's a belief in talking to the people that I know who are involved in these processes, there's a belief that, well, maybe the younger generation doesn't have as much of an affinity to the Rose Bowl as like I do or like you do, right? And it's turning out that that's not the case. They actually do have an affinity to this, to the Rose Bowl parade, to the idea behind this. And that's what we're talking about. It's really similar to trying to balance the interests of where you're going to put the Olympic Games when you know that, you know, Harris is going to be a monster. But you can't have it in Paris every time because everybody has their hand out and they want it somewhere else.
Right.
So then you end up having one in Sochi, right?
Yeah.
And eventually, Paris says, well, look, you know, we can just run our own events. And we're going to do just fine by ourselves. And that's the shit that the Rose Bowl is playing here.
Yep.
And they're playing it very well. They're saying, look, we're the granddaddy of them all. We know economically where we are on this. There's also a lot of community involvement in the Rose Bowl and money that goes into the community that's tied to it. So it's a really, you do a really great job of kind of laying it out for the listeners that, yes, you know, even though when you sit down, you say a 16-team playoff makes all the sense in the world, it does, but we're not starting from zero. Right? We have all these things in place.
Yes.
Now you have people who have, you know, they have more tradition, they have more money, they have more, and they have the ability to say, we'll do this ourselves. And really, really damage what you're trying to build.
Right.
And look, when they talk about the first home game being, you know, at the school, now you have the conferences arguing over, well, does the school get all the money or do we?
Right. Exactly.
Right? Well, you wouldn't have that home game unless you played in one of our conferences. So now, hey, USC, you're hosting the game. I mean, it comes down to, you know, the downfall of the Pac-12 and the buildup of the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Was because back in the early 10s and in the mid-2000s, you know, the Big Ten understood what you were talking about. They said, look, we have premium teams. Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan. We know that there has to be an unfair balance of revenue share, money, et cetera, and priority that goes to those, because when they succeed, the entire conference rises with them. The SEC did the same thing, right? The Pac-10 didn't. The Pac-10 had Washington State and Oregon State coming in throwing a big fit, saying, no, we can't give priority to the LA schools.
Right.
And that's, we talk a lot here about the English Premier League. That's how they do it there. When you play in the English Premier League, you don't get the same amount of money for being, you know, the bottom of the table team that you do from the top. And it's not really based on how you finished, based on who you are as a club.
Right.
Arsenal, Chelsea, City, they get more money than, you know, Burnley and Crystal Palace and Leeds do.
Well, this is the Rose Bowl, to give everybody a little perspective. They are the masters. The year they looked at advertisers and said, you know what? We don't want to put you guys in peril for a year, so we'll just go it alone for a year. And they did it. Mm-hmm. Not many entities can do that. The Rose Bowl and the Masters can.
Augusta National can.
Yep.
Right? And that's why when people get so frustrated by this, and they're more frustrated, I was actually hoping that there would be a little bit different play out in the Big Ten, so you and I could be on the same side of the argument for a change.
Yeah.
You know, the Pac-12 gets left out every year. Right, so there's this argument that, like, hey, you know, you need more teams for the Pac-12 game. And I was kind of hoping that with the Big Ten being as strong as it was this year, there was going to be the argument that two teams did it.
Right.
And then a couple teams lost at the end, and that didn't play out that way. But you talk to anybody, and they see that argument, and they believe that it should be so simple. And then you start to lay out, like, well, you know, it's not much different than how the mafia approaches a neighborhood, right? You have a couple of stores you got to get out of the way, and they're making good money. Why would they want to join your alliance? Right.
Right. Exactly. All right. So now let's shift gears now to it, they're not being hurt at all by being locked out, but because they aren't playing any games. What kind does Major League Baseball understand the dangerous game they're playing right now with the fans? That they are they naive enough to think that they're so wildly popular that they can get away with missing some games, parts of a season? I mean, are they that delusional?
I'm going to get in trouble here. Yes. Not all of them, but those in power, yes. Baseball has a belief, and, you know, they had a former head of MLB in there, Bob Bowman, who's since been removed. I would say dishonorably discharged, so to speak. he used to regularly give a speech that, you know, in 1950, the top three sports were boxing, horse racing, and baseball, and baseball is the only one left. And we always thought that that was an interesting way of framing this, because you're not really paying attention. You're saying, look, we have this massive growth and everything's going well, but you're not looking at your neighbors, who are the NFL and the NBA, and looking at their growth. You're not pacing with their growth. So there's still this old guard in baseball between owners and some of the people that are in the commissioner's office who do believe that, you know, that they have the ability to withstand this the way the Masters of the Rose Bowl do. And often they'll point to participation numbers with kids and that sort of thing, but they just kind of gloss over the ratings numbers. They say, oh, the ratings are good and, you know, attendance isn't that bad, but when you compare it to the people on their block, it is.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the argument. I think the biggest problem that baseball has right now, and they've been talking about it, is just this understanding that if the game changed completely, they're way more reliant on younger players, and the younger players don't make that much money. And so they're trying to players want to bring this into the kind of agreement that a revenue-sharing agreement like the NFL, the NBA, and the NHL have. Baseball is not interested in doing that. So much like, you know, the bowl games, it knows to spite the face, but they know once they go there, they're never coming back. Right? Once you go to revenue share, you can't go back.
So that's right.
The way it is now. And where the baseball, where the listeners may not understand, is that baseball was more predicated on the RSNs than anybody.
Yep.
So RSNs are the regional sports networks where the team sometimes owned them or they partnered with them. And they collected all of the money. There was no national revenue share on the money for these regional sports networks. But the regional sports networks are doing terribly now. They're in carriage wars with all of the different providers. You know, there's a lot of cities where it's even blacked out. Where for here, we couldn't watch Dodger games for 2 years unless you were Time Warner only.
Exactly.
And the Dodgers were playing in the World Series those years. And so the owners are looking at this, and the world is changing around them, and they don't like it. And so you ask, like, are they naive enough to believe this is the case? Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
And just like anybody would look at the college football playoff and say, 16 makes sense. Just like anybody would look at the World Cup and say, you shouldn't play it in Qatar. Just like anybody
right.
would look at that
exactly.
and say, probably shouldn't go to Beijing, right?
Nope.
You just have all of these things that push them on the business side into making poor decisions, which are generally based on greed and money.
I'm shocked that you would say that. I can't believe you'd actually come to that conclusion. All right, I do have to close out with this. I'm looking forward to a fun day when it's James Franklin on one sideline and Lincoln Riley on the other. How happy were you as a USC guy that suddenly they said, you know what, Mike Bone is going to get Lincoln Riley to be the head football coach at your school?
Saw that coming. I certainly didn't. I wanted Franklin, to be honest, because I just like him as a person, too.
Oh, he's phenomenal.
You guys locked him up with that long-term deal. I think his buyout's like $50 million now. Yeah. So he's not going anywhere.
Right.
The one I'm really excited about, and I think what's gotten a little bit glossed over as college football's gotten drunk, is Lincoln Riley's Trojans are opening the season against Brian Kelly's LSU Tigers in 2024 in Vegas.
Oh.
Each team will have 2 years to rebuild. It's going to be fun to actually matter. This team's been so bad for so long.
Right.
It'll be nice if they actually matter again.
Well, they're going to matter. No doubt. All right. So let's rectify a major mistake, and let's not take this long between conversations.
Absolutely. Yeah, anytime. I love coming to talk to you guys.
Yeah. Tony, thanks so much. Happy holidays to you and that beautiful family of yours. My goodness, getting bigger.
It's so fast.
Yeah. Tony, thanks so much. Happy holidays, my friend.
You too, to you and yours. We'll talk soon.